This is Hashtag History, episode 86. I'm Rachel.
And I am Leah.
And like we mentioned in an episode a few weeks ago, we've really been on a women's history kick this season. Mm. It wasn't intentional to highlight quite so many female figures in the same season, but like, no complaints.
Not from us.
No complaints here. I will say, though, that I must have been feeling like particularly feminist the day that I decided on the lineup for the season, which makes me, you know, in hindsight, kind of wonder what was maybe happening in the news that day to put me in that particular mood.
Was it the book you were reading, possibly?
The book we were reading?
Yeah.
Possibly.
Okay.
Anyway, this week we'll be discussing Olga of Kiev, the first recorded female ruler of Russia. We love that for her, who, in an effort to avenge her husband's murder by the Drevlians, quite literally slaughtered the Drevlian people and burned their capital to the ground. So we don't love that.
Were they nice people?
Later in life, she would convert to Christianity, and some 600 years after her death, the Russian Orthodox Church would formally ordain her as a saint. So we love that for her, right?
Yeah.
I don't even know. Okay. We will find in this episode a lot of girl power and badassery, but also the internal conflict of not glorifying murder and destruction. Mm. So, you know, just get ready to feel very conflicted. We're going to dive into all of that in this week's episode of Hashtag History. But as all of our longtime listeners know, we have something else we need to dive into first.
The cocktail.
I'm Rachel.
And I'm Leah.
And this is Hashtag History,
the podcast for both history nerds and history haters alike,
where we dive into history's greatest stories of controversy, conspiracy, and corruption.
I'm excited, first of all, that this is not an American... Not that everything you do is American history,
yeah, but... Yeah, no, I hear you. I hear what you're saying
I'm
to me.
I'm very excited.
I am, too. I really am, too. It did really excite me to research something that's so old.
Yeah.
It's really fun.
Cool. All right, so shout out, first of all, to the Existential Ginger.
Yay!
For the first of a total of 3 sponsored cocktails.
Oh, my God.
She said, quote, "Since finding Hashtag History, I haven't stopped fangirling. It's the history podcast I've been waiting for, discussing all the gnarly stuff our textbooks conveniently left out whilst drinking. I love it all. Thanks for all the hard work you do and for all you bring to the show. Cheers."
Oh!
We love her.
We love her. And by the time this episode has come out, we record pretty far in advance, but by the time this one has come out,
we did guest
on her podcast. So yes, be sure to go check that out. That was a really, really great time.
Yeah, that one was fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So for today's cocktail, I went with something sweet. Not because Olga was, because based on the little I know about her, she probably wasn't.
Yeah.
But because when I tell you what's in this cocktail, you will die and go to heaven before we even try it.
Okay, I can't wait.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, because you got most of the ingredients, but this is the Kiev Sunday cocktail. It's a blended drink.
Mm-hmm.
And it contains cinnamon vodka, which we did like half cinnamon schnapps and half vodka.
Yeah.
Bailey's Irish cream, raspberry, which look how raspberry is spelled, vodka, vanilla ice cream, and then white creme de coco, or like a chocolate liqueur of some kind. And then you blend it all together, and you got a little milkshake, a little milky shake.
I can't wait.
Cheers. Cheers.
This is great.
Oh my God, it's just like a cinnamon milkshake.
But you taste the chocolate too, right?
Oh my God, I taste all of it, and it tastes like heaven.
It's a very good blend of just like a smooth, a milkshakey drink that tastes like both cinnamon and chocolate simultaneously. What's your rating on this one?
10.
Oh.
9? 9.
8 over here.
Really?
I think we've been on such a great roll cocktails. That this one is just a couple steps below what we've had in recent weeks.
Oh my God, it's so good to me. Maybe I'm drunk.
We have recorded a couple of episodes today.
We're three deep right now.
Yeah. Good. I mean, I like it.
Yeah, good regardless.
Mm-hmm. I maybe changed my mind. The more that I'm having this, it is, let's put it up to nine.
It's a nine.
The more that I'm having it, it's just really nice.
Take a big gulp of it.
It's enjoyable.
It's enjoyable. Okay. Thank you, Charisse.
Thank you, Charisse. You killed it with the cocktail. Now, before we begin, there is a very particular picture of Olga of Kiev that I would like us to check out. And I personally feel that it really sets the tone for this episode.
I would not fuck with her.
And that's exactly what I was hoping you would say.
Like, oh my gosh. It's a painting, obviously. Yeah,
you would not mess with her.
And she is staring down death eyes on whoever it is that's painting her.
Yes. I think it's a perfect depiction of her. Like,
holy,
but then she has.
I'm scared.
You're nervous?
I'm nervous.
It is dark outside. She, Olga gets you in the feels.
Yeah.
In the scary feels.
Yeah.
In that picture.
Like, run for your life.
Like, literally run. So we don't know exactly when Olga was born, but considering how far back we are going in history, I'm pretty impressed that historians have confirmed like a narrow time frame of somewhere between 890 AD and 925 AD. And on that note, we did actually already talk about, like, is this the oldest episode we've ever done?
Bathory might have been oldest.
That's true.
But still,
we're not going like AD, right? I was a history major, so I've studied a lot of like ancient Greek, Roman, Chinese history.
Yeah.
It just doesn't come up that often on the podcast because modern day American history is like too scandalous to ignore. But either way, really, really cool and really, really fun to be throwing ourselves this far back in the history timeline.
I'm very into it.
I'm really excited.
Mm-hmm.
Much like how we do not know her exact date of birth, we also don't know her exact family origin, although it is believed that she was born in Pleskov, Russia. We know that at about the age of 15, possibly younger, she married Prince Igor I of Kiev, who, after his father's passing, founded the dynasty that would rule Kievan Rus until 1598. For context, the Kievan Rus was a region of land that covered parts of what is now Russia, Belarus, and Ukraine. In the 12th century historical account titled The Russian Primary Chronicle, Igor was described as soups greedy, in, like in those words, exactly, obviously.
Exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He always wanted more and was oftentimes incredibly unsuccessful in his attempts.
Oh, Igor.
He attempted expeditions against the Byzantine Empire, which would result in more loss than gain to Kiev. And it was in this perpetual state of greediness that Igor would attempt to take financial advantage of a neighboring tribe. The neighboring tribe were the Drevlians. And if you were to put like a relationship status between Kievan Rus and the Drevlians on your Facebook profile, it's complicated. That's exactly what the status would be.
Oh.
Yeah. Basically, to sum it up, when Igor's father, Oleg, was still alive and ruling, the Drevlians paid tribute to him and even joined in on some of those military campaigns against the Byzantine Empire. But once Oleg passed and Igor was in charge, all allegiance fell to the wayside and the Drevlians stopped paying tribute to the Kievan Rus. Pissed off by this, Igor and his big-ass army traveled to the capital of the Drevlian in 945 and demanded that they pay tribute. Obviously, faced with this huge army, the Drevlians gave in and paid him.
Mm-hmm.
But as the story is told, it was on the journey back home while Igor is being a whiny bitch... quote-unquote historical accounts,
yes,
that he decides that the payment the Drevlians had begrudgedly given to him was not enough.
Oh my gosh.
He and a small unit of the army he had originally brought along with him turned around, headed back to the Drevlian capital, and they demanded more tribute. This time, fed up with Igor's greediness, and now faced with a much smaller army, the Drevlian captured Igor and killed him. As legend has it, which we know can sometimes exaggerate things, legend says that when the Drevlian captured Igor, they tied him to a tree and then tore his body in two.
Yeah, gross.
So that's gross. Olga, back in the Kievan Rus with her three-year-old son, Sviatoslav, suddenly found herself as a widow. Naturally, rule would pass on to their son, but considering the fact that Sviatoslav was only a toddler, Olga took over and became the first documented woman to rule Kievan Rus. So, I mean, that's pretty cool. Unfortunately, it had to come as a result of her greedy husband being tortured and murdered, but either way, she's the ruler over all of Kiev and Rus now.
I feel like times were hard.
Times were hard. Now, the Drevlians are, like, they're high on their victory, right? They just killed the founder of this dynasty. They no longer have to pay tribute to Kiev and Rus. They're feeling like they can do anything.
I feel like there's a little did they know coming.
Little did they know. How did you know? That was my next line. This particular move that they're just about to make, you know, after having killed Igor, in my personal opinion, is exceptionally ballsy. Mm-hmm. They had the nerve to send a messenger and 20 negotiators to the new ruler and sudden widow, Olga, with a message that they think that now that she is without a husband, she should marry their prince, Prince Mal.
Mal
is also Leah's cat's name. Yeah. Prince Mal is probably not good in this story, though. But you probably do refer to Mal as Prince Mal.
Well, now I do.
That's what I'm going to do every time I see him. Come here, Prince Mal.
He can be an asshole.
So here's the thing about Prince Mal, though. He's quite literally the guy that killed Olga's husband.
Yeah.
So they're coming in super boastful, super confident, and just super, super callous.
And I know, we talk about this all the time. Mm. I know it's the time. I know that women are not considered equals. But, like, how f***ing disrespectful to be like, well, your dude's gone.
And we killed your dude. Not only your dude is gone, but we are responsible for him being gone.
So, like, you need a dude.
Your dude's gone. We got a new dude. He's the dude that killed your dude. But you should get a dude because you don't have a dude. Olga's pretty sassy and fired up herself, though, and she's ready for the challenge. With 20/20 hindsight, we can read through the lines and hear the sass, but for the Drevlians, what they heard was a very polite response to this marriage proposal. Olga responded with, quote, "Your proposal is pleasing to me. Indeed, my husband cannot rise again from the dead, but I desire to honor you tomorrow in the presence of my people. Return now to your boat and remain there with an aspect of arrogance. I shall send for you on the morrow," unquote.
Oh, get it, girl.
She closed out by telling them they would not be riding on horses, nor would they go by foot, but that rather her people would carry them in their boat. So the Drevlians are like, cool. They're going to parade us around in our boat. That's pretty sweet.
They called us arrogant, but we'll breeze past that.
Yeah, they called us arrogant, but like we are, so we accept it. And that's exactly what happened. When the Drevlians came back the next day, Olga had her people carry the Drevlians in their boat, kind of similar to the style of like a palanquin, right?
Mm-hmm. I know exactly. Yeah.
You know exactly what I mean. And that had them feeling like fancy AF. The Kiev people carried them, and they carried them, and they carried them.
Could you imagine being the boat carrier? Like, being one of those guys and being like, are you f***ing kidding me?
Well, wait.
Carry the guys that just murdered our king.
I'm glad you brought that up, because imagine...
Were they in on it?
Imagine being those people when, after they carried them all the way through Kiev, they carried them all the way into the court, and then they dumped them into a trench that Olga had created just the day before in preparation for this very moment.
Oh, fun. Mm-hmm. So they knew, they were in on it.
Everyone was in on it.
Okay.
Yep. As Olga watched them get buried in this trench just for their making, she leaned over and asked if they, quote, found the honor to their taste.
Ooh, Olga.
So she's sassy.
Ooh.
She's sassy.
AF.
AF. Following this event, Olga sends her own message back to the Drevlians, telling them to send their most distinguished men to her so that they can scoop her up and take her back to Prince Mal. And of course, because we're not in the time period of the internet or smartphones where news travels quicker than you can sneeze, the Drevlians back at home have no idea that 20-something of their men were literally buried in a trench in the Kiev and Rus court.
Mm.
So, of course, the Drevlians are like, hell yeah, let's go get this lady. I don't know this for certain because this isn't written in the chronicles of the time, but I'm just guessing that Olga is a total laughingstock for these people.
Oh, yeah. They're probably, like, making jokes at her expense.
I'm sure. They think they're so smart and so funny and so clever, and that Olga is so desperate and lonely and insecure that she would take their bait.
Yeah.
So when this group of distinguished Drevlian men reach Olga in Kiev, she orders her people to run them a bath. According to her, you know, they need a nice bath after their long journey, after all. She told them to enjoy the bath, get all clean, and then they would come and meet with her. The thing is, though, she's still bitter AF.
Oh, well,
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
While the Drevlians were all in the bathhouse, she had the door shut and the bathhouse set on fire. Every Drevlian inside would die a torturous burning death. After this, the Drevlians, still none the wiser, receive one final message from Olga in which she asked them to, quote, prepare great quantities of mead in the city where you killed my husband that I may weep over his grave and hold a funeral feast for him, unquote.
We've had mead.
I was just going to say that. Yeah, we had mead in our second ever episode.
Yeah. Made by my old roommate, Richard. Yes. Shout out.
It was great. I loved it.
Oh, yeah.
It was delicious.
No, I think there's still a little bit in my liquor pantry.
I was going to say having mead this week would have totally been on brand, but I am very much enjoying this milkshake.
Mm.
Again, 2020 hindsight, we know shit is about to go down. But for the Drevlians, they are taking full advantage of this poor, weeping widow and also the chance to have a feast with a lot of booze.
Well, yeah.
So when Olga and a few of her people arrive at her late husband's grave in the days following, they did hold a drunken feast there, and Olga did indeed weep at his tomb, which is really sad.
Aww.
She waited until they were good and drunk and then ordered her people to kill them as she stood by cheering on the massacre. Again, these accounts can sometimes be a bit of an exaggeration, but the chronicles of the time say that some 5,000 Drevlians were killed during this conflict.
I know times were different, but like...
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. We've told you all before, time and time again, that we are a part of a book club.
What? We have? Have we mentioned that?
Yeah, I think at least 500 times.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Something else we mentioned a lot is how as grown adults with full-time jobs, a side podcast gig, and other everyday responsibilities, it can be hard to find the time to read.
Right. So that's why we oftentimes use audiobooks, and Audible is a great resource for that.
Audible is the leading provider in spoken word entertainment and audiobooks. They have titles ranging from news, self-development, business, fiction, and more.
Not only do they have audiobooks, they also have podcasts, wellness guidance programs like guided meditations, and more.
The best thing about Audible is that you can download titles to listen to offline, anytime and anywhere, across all devices without losing your spot.
And Audible has thousands of titles for you to choose from. Maybe pick one of our recent favorites, such as The Southern Book Club's Guide to Slaying Vampires by Grady Hendrix,
Catch and Kill by Ronan Farrow.
That was a good one. I love that one. Try out a free 30-day trial now when you use our link at www.audibletrial.com/#history.
That's www.audibletrial.com/#history.
Following this bloody massacre, Olga returned to her home where she ordered her army to get ready. The Kievan Rus and the Drevlians would fight for more than a year before Olga would say to the Drevlians, like, what's the deal? Quote unquote. That's what she said.
Yeah.
What's the deal?
What's going on?
Yeah, that's a historical accuracy there. She did essentially say, though, like, all I'm asking from you is that you pay tribute, but you would rather drag on this damaging and costly war. Why? In response to that, the naive Drevlians are like, oh, we thought you were still trying to, like, avenge your murdered husband or something. If that's not the case, sure, we'll pay tribute and just end this whole thing.
Yeah.
Olga agreed with them, saying, yeah, I've had enough death. Just pay me tribute and we'll settle this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, she said what she really wanted from them was 3 pigeons and 3 sparrows. Again, these naive Drevlians are like, that's it? Great. And they produced for her exactly what she had asked.
They didn't think to throw in an extra pigeon or something.
Like, let's do a fourth one.
Let's do a little more.
Just to be safe. When she received the birds, she had her people tie pieces of sulfur to each one of them. When the birds flew back to their homes in the capital, it burned the whole city down. The Primary Chronicles is quoted as saying, quote, there was not a house that was not consumed, and it was impossible to extinguish the flames because all the houses caught fire at once, unquote.
My question is, how did something stay burning that long? Were they like literally neighbors?
Yeah.
Like, okay, sulfur tied to a bird. Like, okay, let's say 10 miles. That's still a long way to fly for some birds.
They were immediate neighbors.
They were like literally next door.
Which is why the Drevlians paid them tribute.
Okay.
Because they were kind of on their land.
Okay.
Yeah. Literally next door. That was a good question.
Okay.
If this wasn't vicious enough, Olga also ordered her soldiers to catch any of the citizens running out of the city to avoid the fires and to kill them. And then for those citizens that were still left behind, she either enslaved them and or forced them to pay tribute. Olga then expanded her kingdom when she took over their leveled out land. Brutal.
Yeah. I get the burning it down, but then making them
still pay tribute to you, enslave them, and then take over all their shit.
Yeah.
Olga refused to get married for the rest of her rule, despite receiving many proposals. And she did a lot during the remainder of her rule. The biggest thing that she did was reform the current system of tribute gathering, actually marking the first recorded legal reform in Eastern Europe history. When the city of Kiev was sieged in 968, Olga successfully defended the city, preserving their reign so that she could one day pass it along to her son. She also established towns, trading posts, and hunting grounds throughout her empire. One of the biggest things that she did during her rule was bring Christianity to Russia. She adopted Orthodox Christianity and was baptized in 957 by the emperor in Constantinople, now Istanbul. Yeah.
Istanbul is Constantinople, then Istanbul is Constantinople.
I was hoping for this moment.
I know you prepared for it.
I prepared for it. I should have put like pause for musical break in my notes. Yeah. This made her the most powerful Rus to convert to Christianity. She was christened with the name Helena. The motivations behind her conversion are interesting to consider. It is certainly possible that Olga really was interested in converting to Christianity. Prior to this, her region had been largely pagan. But we also know her to be super clever. From historical records, it sounds like following this conversion, the emperor that baptized her actually asked her to marry him. She responded like, nah, bro. And she cited the baptism as the reason why. Per church doctrine, he was essentially her godfather, as he had mentored and sponsored her through the baptismal and conversion. So per church doctrine, a godfather is not allowed to marry their goddaughter. They equate that to incest. Mm-hmm. And perhaps she knew that all along. Perhaps she knew that converting to Christianity would help her maintain her autonomy and independence.
Olga.
When Olga returned to Kiev in Rus as a converted Christian, her people were not feeling it. Mm. She attempted to convert the country, including and most specifically her son, but was largely unsuccessful. Despite this, she still built churches all throughout the empire because, in my personal opinion, who would mess with this chick?
I mean, look at the picture of her. Look at it and tell me you would mess with her.
Yeah. Look at the picture that we will be posting on Instagram and you tell me if you would mess with her.
Because I wouldn't. I would not even pull a little tiny. I wouldn't even like laugh at her expense.
I would say, Olga, what can I do for you? Would you like another Kiev Sunday
How may I cocktail. Pay tribute to you?
How may I pay tribute? Hopefully it can be in Kiev Sunday cocktails, but in any which way you would like them.
Yeah.
Here they are. Yeah. So exactly. Like, you may not agree with everything she's doing, but like, would you be the one to stand up to her?
No.
She literally had an entire tribe killed. Okay.
Okay.
When her son Sviatoslav took over, he had appointed bishops literally expelled. But when his mother passed in 969 due to illness, he respected her wishes and gave her a Christian burial, with a priest performing the last rites over her before she passed. She preferred the Christian burial to the pagan tradition of a funeral feast, much like the one she had had thrown for her husband before she slaughtered his murderers.
Yeah.
It said that when she passed, quote, her son wept for her with great mourning, as did likewise her grandsons and all the people, unquote. Aww. Although her son did not convert to Christianity, he respected his mother's wishes by promising to her that although he wouldn't adopt the religion, he would not persecute anyone that did, which was a pretty big freaking deal at the time.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
And although she was not able to convert her son, she clearly had a large influence on her grandson, Vladimir the Great, because when Lil Vlad eventually took over, he made Christianity the official religion of Kievan Rus in 988. And thus, some nearly 600 years later, the Russian Orthodox Church would officially name Olga a saint, mm-hmm. considering her to be, as translated in English, quote, equal to the apostles. She is recognized as such not only by the Russian Orthodox Church, but also by the Eastern Orthodox Church, the Ruthenian Greek Catholic Church, the Ukrainian Catholic Church, and even the Roman Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. We look back on her now as this really complex figure with a really complicated history, someone that once killed and destroyed an entire tribe in a vicious, manipulative, and brutal way, is now considered to be equal to the apostles by the church. But hey, isn't forgiveness what Christianity is all about?
And I mean, also, Christianity is also all about spreading Christianity, which she clearly did.
I love that you said that.
Yeah.
Because the very next thing I'm going to say is a quote from a writer named Alex Johnson. He did a piece for museumhack.com. Mm-hmm. And when he spoke about the legacy of Olga of Kiev, he said, quote, "So what's the lesson here? Perhaps it's this. Medieval Christianity's capacity for forgiveness was boundless, especially if you boost membership,"
yeah.
unquote. That yeah. goes directly to what you just said.
Yeah.
And I mean, that is, that's why she became a saint, because of her attempts to spread Christianity to Russia.
Yeah. Like, who cares all the other crap that happened? She made more Christians.
Yeah. And she did. Like, even though by large, the, you know, Kiev and Rus did not adopt Christianity, there certainly were more Christians by the time she passed than there were before.
And they weren't persecuted.
They weren't persecuted
because her son cared about her mm-hmm. beliefs enough to not persecute them for it, and then so on. And so, you know what I
exactly.
mean?
Exactly. Like,
that lends itself to, okay, then they had children, and you know what I mean?
And thus elevated her to saint status.
Yeah.
In another great quote, this one by writer Angelo Stagnaro for the National Catholic Register, he said, quote, "God wants us to love our enemies. He doesn't want us to pretend that we don't have enemies. Avoiding confrontations isn't the equivalent to peacemaking. Jesus is good. He's not nice. Why would St. Olga need to be?" Unquote. And I really super love that.
Yeah.
I think that's perfect. I think that nails her to a T.
Yeah.
Good means fair. Good means just. It don't mean nice.
Yeah.
And Olga Kiev, she wasn't nice.
No. Look at that picture.
Just look at the picture. Thank you all so much for listening to this episode of Hashtag History.
We will share the picture that we discussed on this episode to our Instagram, and all sources used to put together the episode can be found on our website. You can find us at hashtaghistory-pod.com.
We would love it if you would subscribe to us on whatever podcast platform that you use. Share about us with literally all of them. All of your family and friends. And then we would also love it if you gave us a rate and review.
And then circling back to Instagram, you can check us out there at #history_podcast. And then we're also on other social media platforms. You can find us on TikTok at #history, all one word. And you can find us on Twitter at #history_.
And then we are also on Patreon, where for as little as $1 a month, if you come over and join us, you can help support our books and booze supply. You will also get access to some behind the scenes content. We have weekly #hangout episodes, and we mail you cards and stickers.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.
Subsequently. No, I'm just kidding. I'm going to cut that out, obviously. Stop. Or you're going to cut that out, obviously. I'm going to cut that out. I was so afraid I was going to say that wrong. That's why I literally put that.
Yeah.
I know how to say
that. I know.
But I felt like by the third episode, I'm like, I'm going to say, I don't know. I didn't know. Belarus. I was going to say something wrong.
Yeah.
Kievan's love. That's what I almost said. I almost said Kievan's love.
That sounds like a good cold, like a type of coleslaw that you should eat. Kievan's love.
First woman to rule.
I feel like that was actually more 90s of us, but which is also hip right now. We're in. We're in with the cool kids.
The 90s are in, and we are very 90s.
Yeah.
Olga.
Kiss me.
Fuck. The Drevlians back at home. I came up with that myself, and I thought it was funny.
It was really funny.
Yeah. I thought it was funny there. I was like, it can, though. Like, yeah. Before you can get a sneeze out, it's like Kim Kardashian is dating whatever his name is, Pete Davidson. You know who Pete Davidson is.
The name sounds
so
familiar.
The one that was engaged to Ariana Grande, who was also dated Kate Beckinsale.
No!
There's like
Kim?
Kim Kardashian, like PDA. Look up. Okay, we'll pause because it's going to take a moment. You might want to pause.
Battles and shit.
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, they were like, what the fuck?
What I would say, though, the difference, too, is there's no, like, if
and
there,
it's so long
well,
ago.
What I would say is if there was information about the battles, you are correct. It wouldn't be in here because I would not include it.
Yeah.
But also, there's no information for any of the battles because this is a bazillion years old.
Okay.
Yeah. No, you have a great point that, like, if this had been set in the 1800s, mm-hmm. this is still how I would have written it. But also, at least in my defense, there's zero information.
Right. And so, I believe that. Yeah.
Okay. But you're not wrong. We would have gone through every campaign and conflict and battle and conquest.
I mean, I would have an abridged version of
course.
It.
But I wouldn't even. No, mine is like, so what's the deal? What's the scoop? Isn't that how every battle is fought?
Yeah.
What's the scoop?
What's going on?
What's the scoop, dudes? Yeah. So anyway.